Good evening, Doctor. You look a bit irritated, if you'll pardon my saying.
Good evening, Mr. Manning. Good evening. Yes, I am a bit annoyed, and with good reason. I don't know if I've told you, but Holmes has been listening in to these reminiscences. Well, here's a letter I received for him after last week's story. Read it.
All right. My dear Watson, I noticed that in your last broadcast, you gave way to your regrettable habit of emotionalizing your story. Detection, my dear fellow, is or ought to be an exact science. To tinge it with romanticism is like introducing a love story into the fifth proposition of Euclid. As ever, Sherlock Holmes.
Well, what do you think of that?
But the emotion was there. You couldn't tamper with the truth.
Holmes has always maintained that the truth is not in what you say, but in the impression you create in the other person's mind. Well, Holmes always complained that I overstressed the human element in recording his cases. How well I remember the attitude with which he received the publishing of my first book about his adventures. It was a cold morning in early spring. We were sitting on either side of a cheery fire in our rooms in Baker Street. A thick fog rolled down between the dun-colored houses. Our gas was lit. It shone on the white cloth and glimmered on the coffee cups and on the silver. The breakfast table had not yet been cleared away. Holmes had been silent all the morning, smoking his long cherrywood pipe, which usually displaced his favorite tray when he was in a disputatious mood. Altogether, he was not in the best of tempers.
Messes. Where are the messes? Look at that confounded fog. What happens to all the messes in this house, I'd like to know?
My dear Holmes, why not use the tongs and a live coal if you want to relight your pipe?
Huh? Oh! I've burned myself.
For heaven's sake, Holmes, stop scuffling. Something's annoying you. Why not get it off your chest?
It's that confounded book of yours.
What?
Sensationalism, Watson. Rank sensationalism. You're always placing the emphasis on the crime. Crime is common, logic is rare. You should stress the logic. You have degraded what should have been a course of lectures into a series of tales.
Now, really, Holmes, that's not logical. You're always complaining that crime is falling off. You say there are no first-class criminals left.
Quite. And therefore, if you depend on the crime to hold your readers, you will soon be a back number. Criminals. Bah! You've lost all their enterprise and originality. My practice seems to be degenerating into an agency for recovering lost lead pencils and giving good advice to young ladies from boarding schools.
Advice to the love lord, eh?
Well, look at this. This note. It came by the morning, this morning's post. Here. The last straw, that's what it is. Read it.
Let's have a look. Dear Mr. Holmes, I'm very anxious to consult you as to whether I should or I should not accept the situation which has been offered me as a governess. I love you. I shall call at 10:30 tomorrow if I do not inconvenience you. Yours faithfully, Violet Hunter. Where is she? Call at 11 now.
Exactly. She's late. Just like a woman.
Mr. Holmes, you should see your young lady now walking briskly up the street.
I see. Brisk, purposeful manner. Nice, biting, silicon face.
Yes, it is. She's stopping at our door.
Well, maybe something in this case after all, my dear Watson. Is not the hysterical sort that makes a fuss over nothing. There she is. Come in. How do you do?
This is Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Quite. And this is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Oh, I trust you'll excuse my troubling you, Mr. Holmes, but I've had a very strange experience. And as I have no relations of any sort to advise me, I thought I'd best come to you.
I shall be very happy to do anything that I can.
Well, I've been a governess for 5 years in the family of Colonel Kent Monroe. She's been transferred to Nova Scotia so that for the last few months I've been without a situation. Well, I advertised and answered advertisements, but without success. You see, the money I had saved began to run out, and I was at my wit's end.
Indeed. Go on.
Well, yesterday I called in at a well-known employment agency run by a Miss Stoker. When I arrived, the outer office was filled with young ladies looking for situations. I had failed to wait. But I did. After about half an hour, my name was called out. Well, the door to Miss Stover's private office was ajar. He could describe it as a prodigiously stout man with a round, smiling face and a heavy chin. His eyes were like two little slits. Well, I advanced to the door, my knees trembling. Oh, Mr. Holmes, if you know how I needed that work.
Come in, my dear. Come in. Mr. Newcastle. This is Miss, what is your name, my dear?
Miss Hunter. Violet Hunter.
Oh, yes. Miss Hunter.
Capital. I couldn't ask for anything better. I'm sure you'll do, Miss Hunter.
I hope so, Mr. Richardson.
You're looking for a situation as a governess?
Yes, sir.
And what salary do you ask?
Well, I had £4 a month in my last place.
£4? Sweating, frank sweating. How anyone could have the audacity to offer that to a lady with such a question, such accomplishment. A lady fitted for the rearing of a child who may someday play a considerable part in the history of this country. Your salary with me, madam, would commence at £100 a day.
£100? Oh, Mr.
Rucastle. Furthermore, it is my custom to advance my young lady half their salary beforehand.
May I ask where you live, Mr. Rucastle?
Hampshire, a charming rural spot. The Copper Beaches is the name of the place. 5 miles north of Winchester, or the dearest old house.
And what would be my duty?
One child, a dear little romp of 8-6. Oh, if you could see him killing cockroaches with a slipper. Snap, snap, snap. He's gone before you could wink.
My sole duty, then, is to take care of this child.
Well, I'm sure your good sense would suggest that you obey any little commands which my wife might give, provided, of course, that they were such as a lady might obey with propriety. You see no difficulty.
Oh, I should be happy to make myself useful.
Oh, by the way, in dress, for example, we're savvy people. Savvy but kind-hearted. Now, if you were asked to wear a particular dress that we might give you, you wouldn't object to our little whim.
No.
Or to sit here or there. That wouldn't be offensive to you.
Why, no.
Or to cut your hair short before you come to it.
My hair?
Oh, yes, it is quite essential. It's a little fancy of my wife, you see. And lady fancies, my dear, Miss Hunter, must be consulted.
My hair? Oh, no, I couldn't.
No, what a pity. Well, in that case, Miss Stover, I'd best inspect a few more of your young ladies.
You gave them, Miss Hunter? I'm afraid you must consider yourself stuck to marriage.
Oh, but
you can hardly expect us to expect ourselves to find another such opening for you.
But Miss Stover.
Good day, Miss Hunter.
Oh, just a minute, Miss Stover. Let's not be too hard on the young lady. After all, my request was a little sudden. Perhaps, Miss Hunter, you'd like 24 hours in which to consider the matter. And in view of the fact that you have particularly beautiful hair, I might be willing to raise the salary to £120 a year to recompense you for our little eccentricity.
Unusual, most unusual, my dear Miss Hunter. What do you make of it, Watson?
Perhaps the gentleman's wife is a lunatic and he wishes to humor her in her fancy in order to prevent an outbreak.
Possibly, Watson. Possibly. In any case, it doesn't seem a nice household for a young lady.
But the money, Mr. Holmes. The money, and I need it so.
Well, yes, the pay is good. Too good. Why should they give you £120 when they can have their pick for 40? There must be some strong reason.
But I have no choice.
Then you've made up your mind to accept?
Yes, I must. I thought if I told you the circumstances, you would understand afterwards if I wanted your help. And Mr. Holmes, I could feel so much stronger if I knew you were behind me.
Certainly you may carry that feeling away with you. And if at any time you should find yourself in danger...
What danger could there be?
My dear Miss Hunter, you could cease to be a danger if we could define it. But remember, at any time, day or night, just telegraph me and we'll come to your help.
Oh, of course. Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Thank you.
It's been almost a week since that charming Miss Hunter called. Conditions must be pretty good at the Copper Beaches, or we'd have heard from her.
You never know, Watson. You never know. she may not be able to get to a telegraph office.
Nonsense. Nothing very dreadful can happen out in the open country like this.
That's where you're wrong, Watson. My experience that the vilest alleys in London do not present a more dreadful record of sin than does this smiling, beautiful countryside.
Oh, you mean Crete? What do you mean?
The pressure of public opinion is greatest in the towns. There is no lane so vile that the scream of a tortured child or the thud of a drunkard's blow does not beget sympathy and assistance from the neighbors. But the countryside, my dear Watson, filled with its lonely houses, think of the hellish cruelty, the hidden wickedness. Life may go on year in, year out in such places, and no one the wiser. Had our young friend gone to Winchester, I should not have had this fear for her safety. It's the 5 miles of country which makes the danger. See what it is, Watson.
Oh, thank you.
It's a
telegram
for you, though. Oh, give it to me.
Tommy Hunter. Oh, what's he say?
Come at once. We'll meet you at the Black Swan Hotel, Winchester, at 3 this afternoon. Abbott, my wits end, don't fail me.
What do you suppose has happened?
Hurry, Watson. We've no time to lose. There's a train from Waterloo Station in half an hour. If we can only get to her in time.
In just a moment, we will follow Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson on their strange journey.
Yes, there's the Black Swan. Opposite the station.
Yes, and if I'm not mistaken, that's Miss Hunter waiting for us on the doorstep. She looks a bit pale and shaky, eh, Holmes?
Yes. Poor girl is obviously frightened.
Mr. Holmes, so kind of you to come. You too, Dr. Watson.
Oh, no, it's all
pleasure. I'll tell you how I'm so glad.
There now, Miss Hunter. Perhaps if we go inside, they can give us a private sitting room.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. I've ordered tea this way.
Ah, yes, that's better. Nice, cozy fire. Close the door, will you, Watson?
Yes, sir.
That's right. Now then, suppose we let the doctor do the pouring while you tell the story. First of all, how'd you like to tea?
2 lumps of a little tea.
Oh,
right,
oh.
Thank you, Dr. Watson.
Yes, and, now?
Well, first of all, I've had no actual ill treatment from Mr. and Mrs. Newcastle, but he's frightened me. However, I'd best begin at the beginning.
Yes, that is generally a good place to start.
Well, Mr. Holmes, Harper Beach is a large, sinister-looking house, almost completely surrounded by woods. It's frightening. From the moment of my arrival, I was met at the door by Mr. Newcastle and his wife.
And, is he...
No, Mrs. She's not married.
I see.
She's a small, pale-faced woman, much younger than Mr. Newcastle. In fact, I gather that she's his second wife. She was either the daughter by the first marriage, a girl now over 20, but she's not living at the house. Mr. Newcastle said that she couldn't get along with her stepmother, so he sent her to America, to Philadelphia.
And does Mrs. Newcastle strike you as a difficult woman to get along with?
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. She's shy and rather quiet. More than once, I surprised her in tears. At first, I thought it might be worry over the disposition of her child.
What's the matter with his disposition?
Well, he's badly spoiled. He has an ungovernable temper. He seems to take great delight in torturing birds and small animals.
Pleasant little beast.
And the rest of the household?
Well, there's only one servant. Taller is his name. A rough, uncouth man with a perpetual smell of drink about him. I was thinking, I don't know. Except perhaps because he's the only one who can manage Carlo.
Carlo?
Yes. Carlo's a huge, underfed mastiff that's kept chained in the stables during the day, but at night they let him out. This is a terrible beast. Even Mr. Newcastle is afraid of him. I'm sure he'd carry him faster to the brook.
I wonder why Mr. Newcastle desires such ferocious protection.
I'm sure I don't know unless... Unless there's something on the top floor of the west wing that he wants to protect.
The west wing, eh?
Yes, the door that leads into it is opposite my room and it's kept securely locked.
Yes, it looks nasty to me, though.
Please, Watson, please, don't interrupt.
Well, The second day after my arrival, immediately after breakfast, Mr. Rootcastle asked me to put on a dress which had been laid out for me on my bed.
Now, what was it like?
Well, it wasn't a new dress, Mr. Holmes, but the material was excellent and of a particularly brilliant shade, and electric blue.
Oh, electric blue,
John. I put it on and went down to the living room. Mr. Rootcastle had placed a chair for me by the front window. He asked me to sit there with my back to the window and to read to him from the French novel. Well, I read for an hour, and at the end of that time, he said I might go upstairs and sing.
Strange.
This experience has been repeated every morning since then. Well, as time passed, I became more and more curious. Why were they so careful to keep my face turned away from the window? Naturally, I was consumed with the desire to see what was going on behind my back. So today, I devised a means. I noticed at breakfast that Mr. Rootcastle had had quite a few drinks. A happy thought seized me. My hand mirror had been broken, so I concealed a piece of it in my handkerchief and later in my book, feeling sure that Mr. Rootcastle was too drunk to notice. Holding the book up, I was able to see everything behind me.
And what did you see?
Well, at first there was nothing. At the second glance, however, I saw a young man in a gray suit leaning against the railing which bordered our field. He was looking earnestly in my direction. Mr. Rootcastle must have noticed my surprise, for he burst out angrily.
Really, Miss Hunter, your attention must be wandering. That's the second time that you've read that passage.
Oh.
Furthermore, there's an impertinent fellow up the road who's staring at you. Is he a friend of yours?
Oh, no, Mr. Rootcastle, I don't know anyone around here.
Well, kindly turn around and motion him to go away.
Oh, wouldn't it be better not to notice him?
Do what I signal. Really, don't you come as you to have any followers?
Very well, Mr. Rootcastle. Where?
Impertinent fellow. That will be all for this morning, Miss Hunter. You may go to your room.
Oh, but Mr. Rootcastle, I hope you
don't. Go to your room, I say.
Yes, sir.
And after this, you needn't bother to wear that blue dress.
Oh, dear, what a frightful household. If I could only get away from here, it's all so depressing. But he's left the key in the door to the guest room. He must be there. I wonder what's inside. Oh, it wouldn't hurt to take just one look. Oh, how dark it is and sleepy. Three doors. For the middle one is barred at the end of another one is bolted here. And the wire. Oh, but look at the picture of this. What was that? Oh, you should be the best. Someone's in here. Or maybe it's something. I can't stand it. Too eerie. I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out. Oh, dear, that comes Mr. Lucas. Yes, it's here. Oh, Mr. Lucas.
I thought it must be when I saw the door open.
Oh, I'm so frightened.
Now, my dear young lady, and what frightened you?
Well, I was foolish enough to go into that vacant wing, but it was so lonely and eerie, and a bat swooped down into my face.
Is that all?
Well, what else could that be?
And why do you suppose that I keep that door locked?
I'm sure I don't know.
It's to keep people out who have no business there, you see.
I'm sure if I'd known.
Well, you know now, my dear young lady. And if you ever put your foot over that threshold again, I'll throw you to the master.
What a dreadful experience.
Mr. Holmes, I feel sure there's someone locked in that room. Someone who's unhappy. Perhaps tortured. Oh, good heaven, it's almost 5. I promised to be back by 6. He seems as if he's going out. If Mr. Rootcastle should discover where I've been.
You acted like a brave and sensible girl, Miss Hunter.
Yes, indeed you have.
Do you think you could do one more thing?
I can try, Mr. Holmes.
Dr. Watson and I will be at the top of the hills by 7. The Rootcastle will be gone by that time, and I don't imagine the Mastiff will be let loose until they return.
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. It would be too dangerous for them to get back in the house.
Good. We will hope the Toller is still drunk.
At any rate, you must get us into the house. We must explore the west wing.
I'll do my best, Mr. Holmes. Now I must hurry. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye, Lieutenant. Well, my dear Holmes, what do you make of it all? Blue dress and the man in front of the house.
Obviously, they've had someone, had her impersonating someone. Someone young whose hair has been cut off during an illness. That someone is probably the person imprisoned in the west wing.
Sinister.
That is not the most sinister part of Miss Hunter's story.
No, what is it?
The unpleasant disposition of the child.
Well, what's that got to do with it?
My dear Watson, as a medical man, you know that a child's tendencies can be discovered by a study of the parents. But heredity is a science to be worked backwards as well. You can get a good insight into the character of the parents by studying the children. This child is cruel, abnormally cruel. He probably inherits it from one of his parents. I only hope nothing serious happens before 7 o'clock tonight.
What a night. The first time it's over the season.
Listen to the house. This group of copper beeches in front of it. Yes. Miss Hunter waiting for us in the doorway.
Close, Mr. Kerr.
Oh, come in, come in. You must be close to the street.
Oh, you're rather wet, yourself. Be careful, you know. You'll be
quiet, Watson, quiet. What's that sounding?
The toller. He was just going out to release the dog. I sent him to the wine cellar, then locked him in.
Splendid.
I managed to get her shoes off him. He was quite drunk. They are duplicates of Mr. Rickard.
Better and better, but come along upstairs. We've no time to wait. Have you got your revolver handy, Watson?
Yes.
Good.
Good heavens, that lightning must have hit quite near here.
Well, the copper beaches, no doubt.
No, this, please. Oh, this one. That's right. Nothing here. Come along.
Listen to that rain on the roof.
The middle door, you said. Hello in there. No answer. Don't like that. Watson, help me remove this bedstead, will you?
Yeah.
That's right. Ah, hide it one side. Here, cut the rope. That's it.
The door's locked.
Oh, you must break it open then. Come on. One, two, five. Hello. There's no one here.
The villain Lucas has made away with the prisoner.
Maybe right. He's probably been carried off.
Yes, but how?
Through the skylight. It's still open. Shut that table over here.
What are you going to do?
Stand on it, of course. Yes, yes. Two pairs of footprints, and there's a ladder resting against the eaves. Oh, that's how he did it.
But that's not possible. The ladder wasn't there when the Lucas went away.
Then he must have come back.
He's a dangerous and clever man. Listen. Yes. I think I hear his steps on the stairs.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, kill us all.
I thought I'd find you here.
Oh, villain, what have you done with your daughter?
I'm the one that's brought that. You see, Robert, I've caught you. You're in my power. I'll take you. Hello.
Oh, hello. I'm trying to get the dog room. He's on the train.
Quick, Watson. We must close the front door.
My
door.
Shut up and stand back, Watson. Oh, Mr. Holmes, thank heaven. You've killed Carlo. I thought it was too late. It's so horrible. I think I...
Watson, until bring Lucas into the house, will you?
Oh, you're so strange. Weak.
Please, it's all over. Just you go upstairs and pack your bag. Dr. Watson and I are going to take you back to town with us on the 9 o'clock train.
you think, Watson, that Newcastle will live?
I'm afraid so, Holmes.
Oh, I'm so glad to get away from that dreadful place.
I say, Holmes, just what did happen to the prisoner in the West Wing, and who was it?
It's all so disgustingly simple, my dear Watson. It's Newcastle's daughter, as I suspected. It seems that she had inherited some money from her mother, who was Newcastle's first wife. When she threatened to get married and take a small fortune with her, her father tried to get her to sign a paper giving the money to him. He worried her until she got brain fever and had to have all her hair cut off.
Oh, what a brute.
I got all these details from Tilla. Tilla, her young man, stuck to her and she to him. After that, Mr. Newcastle locked his daughter up and brought Miss Hunter down from London in order to impersonate her, get rid of the persistent shooter. This young gentleman, however, was a persevering chap, and having greased Tola's palm very thoroughly, he learned the true state of affairs. With the help of Tola and a long stepladder, he rescued his fiancée. They're now headed for Southampton with a special license, and this time, Miss Newcastle, or rather, Mrs. Fowler, is really going to America on our honeymoon.
Oh, this is quite romantic, isn't it, Holmes?
Ah, you and your romance, Watson. You're a regular old woman.
Well, I'm glad we were able to help the poor thing, but I wouldn't go back to that house again. Not for twice the salary.
Oh, that reminds me, Miss Hunter. I was talking to a friend of mine about you the other day. She had a private school in Walsall. I believe she said she had an opening for you.
Oh, Mr. Holmes, you're a darling.
Oh, no, my dear, it's quite inconsequent. Already an old cut-up Watson.
Dr. Watson, you certainly had some exciting times when you were living with Sherlock Holmes.
I certainly did, Mr. Manning. Those were the days. I mean, never a dull moment. Yes, but I think of the thrilling experiences that Holmes brought into my life. I can always